गीता माधुर्य चैप्टर 3 इंट्रोडक्शन द टीचिंग ऑफ द गीता इज बेस्ड ऑन मैन्स एक्सपीरियंस व्हाइल स्टार्टिंग दिस गॉस्पल लॉर्ड कृष्णा फर्स्ट ऑफ ऑल क्लैरिफाइज दैट द बॉडी एंड द सोल आर टोटली डिफरेंट फ्रॉम ईच अदर द बॉडी इज ट्रांजिटरी अनरियल लिमिटेड एंड पेरिशेबल व्हाइल द सोल इज इटर्नल रियल omnipresent and imperishable. Therefore, one should neither feel sad at the destruction of the perishable, nor should have a desire to maintain the imperishable. This is discrimination. This discrimination is inevitable in all the three disciplines of action, knowledge, and devotion. When a man discriminates the self from the body, the desire for salvation is aroused. Not to speak of salvation, even the desire for heaven, etc., is aroused when a man regards his own self as different from the body. Therefore, the Lord starts his gospel with discrimination. This topic of discrimination begins with the 11th verse of the second chapter and continues up to the 30th verse. The Lord, instead of using the philosophical terminology, has used simple terms to enable the people to understand the topic easily. It means that every person deserves God realization because the human body has been bestowed upon us only to realize Him. So, every human being can realize God by giving due importance to discrimination. In this topic, even the term intellect has not been used by the Lord. In order to distinguish the real from the unreal, the imperishable from the perishable, the eternal from the transitory, and the soul or spirit from the body, there is need only for discrimination rather than intellect. Discrimination is beyond intellect. As prakriti or nature and purush or spirit both are beginningless, so is the discrimination which distinguishes the real from the unreal. This discrimination has been bestowed upon all creatures by God, and it is revealed in the intellect. Birds and beasts also know what should or should not be eaten. Even trees and creeping plants feel hot and cold and experience the favorable and the unfavorable circumstances. Human beings are specially endowed with this discrimination, which can release them from the bondage of birth and death and lead them to eternal quietude and bliss. When this discrimination is aroused, that is, when a man can distinguish between the spirit and the body, his affinity for the world, including senses, mind, and intellect, is renounced, and his intellect becomes purified and equanimous. The Lord, for the first time, has used the term intellect in the 39th verse of the second chapter, where the topic of discipline of action begins. He ends with the sentence, "The same ancient yoga has been imparted to you today by me," in the third verse of the fourth chapter. In this context, the Lord has laid special emphasis on the performance of duty. In the discipline of action, the resolute intellect is single. When a man firmly resolves that he has to attain salvation, favorable or unfavorable circumstances cause no obstacle, and thus he attains equanimity without making any efforts. When a man resolves to attain God realization, his attachment and attraction to the world begins to disappear. Attachment to pleasures and prosperity is the main obstacle to the attainment of the resolute intellect. Having paid emphasis on the resolute intellect in the discipline of action, the Lord asks Arjun specially to perform his duty with equanimity. He declares, "You have a right to action alone, but never at all to its fruit. Perform your duty being steadfast in yoga, viz. Equanimity." The Lord also declares, "Far lower than the yoga of wisdom is action, that is, action performed for its fruit is far inferior to the yoga of wisdom or equanimity." He further declares, seek thou refuge in wisdom. Then he declares, endowed with wisdom or evenness of mind, one casts off during this life both good and evil deeds. Therefore, devote thyself to yoga. Yoga is skill in the action. Arjun had already made up his mind not to fight. So in the 31st verse of the first chapter, he said, I do not foresee any good in slaying my kith and kin. Then in the 45th verse, he says, what a great sin have we resolved to commit in striving to slay our own people. In the 5th verse of the 2nd chapter, Arjun says, it is better to live by begging than to slay these honored teachers. In the 3rd verse of the 2nd chapter, Lord Krishna ordered Arjun to arise, shaking off his petty faint-heartedness, while Arjun declared his determination not to fight in the 9th verse of the 2nd chapter. It is a fact that a bearer cannot understand what a preacher preaches if he is already full of prejudices. That is why Arjun could not have a thorough grasp of the topic explained to him by Lord Krishna. Lord Krishna meant to say that an action performed for its fruit was far inferior to the yoga of wisdom. Therefore, a man should perform actions without thinking of their fruit. Arjun could not make out the real meaning of Lord Krishna's words. They appeared to him to be ambiguous and confusing. So, Arjun puts the question to Lord in the next 2 verses in order to get his doubt cleared. Chapter 3. Arjun said, O Janardhan, if you consider equanimity superior to action, why then do you urge me to this dreadful action? Sometimes you ask me to perform action, while sometimes you ask me to depend on knowledge. You are bewildering my mind with the perplexing words. Therefore, tell me definitely the one discipline by which I may get at the Supreme. Lord Krishna said, O sinless Arjun, in this world, 2 courses of spiritual discipline have been enunciated by me. In the case of Samkhya Yogi, spiritual discipline proceeds along the path of knowledge, whereas in the case of Karma Yogi, it proceeds along the path of action. The result of the 2 is equanimity. Arjun asked, is it necessary to perform action to attain that equanimity? Lord Krishna said, yes, action is necessary because that equanimity is neither attained without entering upon action nor merely by renunciation of action. Arjun asked, why is it not attained by renunciation of actions? Lord Krishna said, none can ever remain really actionless even for a moment, for everyone is helplessly driven to action by nature-born qualities or modes. Then, how can a being renounce actions? Arjun asked, if man silently sits without performing any action, is it not renunciation of actions? Lord Krishna said, no, the deluded man who outwardly controls the organs of actions but sits mentally dwelling on object of senses is called a hypocrite, and his activity is not a renunciation of action. Arjun asked, when the equanimity mentioned by you is neither attained without the performance of actions, nor by renunciation of actions, nor by sitting silently outwardly dwelling on sense objects, then how is that equanimity attained? Lord Krishna said, O Arjun, the man who controlling the organs of sense and action by the mind remains unattached and undertakes the yoga of action excels. That is, he attains equanimity. Therefore, perform your allotted duty ordained by the scriptures, for such action is superior to inaction. And by desisting from action, you cannot even maintain your body. Arjun asked, shall I not be bound by actions, O Lord? Lord Krishna said, no, man is bound by actions other than those which are performed for the sake of sacrifice or yajna. Therefore, perform action or duty, being free from attachment, for the sake of sacrifice alone, in order to safeguard the tradition of duty. Arjun asked, why should I perform action at all? Lord Krishna said, O brother, having created mankind along with the spirit of sacrifice at the beginning of creation, the creator, grandfather Brahma, said to them, by this sacrifice or duty you propagate, and may this yield you the enjoyment you seek. Mankind asked, why should we make this sacrifice, O grandfather? Lord Brahma said, foster the gods through this sacrifice and let the gods foster you. Thus, fostering one another disinterestedly, that is, by performing your duty only for others, you will attain the highest good, that is, God. Mankind asked, what will happen if we don't make the sacrifice, O grandfather? Lord Brahma said, fostered by sacrifice, the gods will surely bestow on you the necessities for the performance of your duty without demand. But if you enjoy the gifts bestowed by them without giving them anything in return, you will undoubtedly become a thief. Arjun asked, how to escape this sin, O Lord? Lord Krishna said, O brother, those who perform actions as duty for the welfare of others, as the remains of sacrifice, they attain equanimity and are freed from sins. While those who perform actions only for their own comforts commit only sins. Arjun asked, O Lord, you have mentioned the ordinance of Brahma pertaining to duty. What do you say in this connection? Lord Krishna said, I want to say in this connection that it is very necessary to perform duty to follow the wheel of creation, because all beings are evolved from food, food is produced from rain, rain ensues from sacrifice or yajna or duty, and sacrifice is born of action without any interested motive. The Vedas mention the method for the performance of duty, and the Vedas proceed from the imperishable God. So, the imperishable pervades the sacrifice or duty. It means that he can be realized by discharging one's duty. So, it is very necessary for human beings to discharge their duty. Arjun asked, what happens if one does not discharge one's duty in order to safeguard the wheel of creation? Lord Krishna said, he who does not discharge his duty in order to safeguard the wheel of creation, such a voluptuous and sinful man lives in vain. That is, it is better if he dies. Arjun asked, and what happens if he performs his duty according to your ordinance in order to safeguard the wheel of creation? Lord Krishna said, such a man takes delight in the self, is gratified with the self, and is contented in the self, and for him there is no obligatory duty. For him there is no object to achieve either by the performance of an action in this world or to lose by the non-performance of an action, nor has he any selfish dependence of any kind on anybody. Arjun asked, can I also become such a man? Lord Krishna said, yes, you can become. Perform your duty well, constantly, without attachment. For by performing duty without attachment, man attains the supreme. Arjun asked, has any man performed his duty without attachment and attained the supreme? Lord Krishna said, yes, it is through action or duty without attachment that Janak and other wise men attained the supreme. Even after attaining the supreme, they performed actions having an eye to public welfare, that is, by deviating the world from the evil path to the virtuous one. Therefore, you should also perform action keeping in mind the public welfare. Arjun asked, how is that public welfare done? Lord Krishna said, that is done in two ways, by setting an example and by words. Whatever a great man does is followed by others. Whatever standard he sets up by his words, people follow the same. Arjun asked, you gave the example of Janak and other wise men for God realization. Is there also an example of anyone who has performed actions for public welfare? Lord Krishna said, yes, I am an example. There is nothing in the three worlds for me to do, nor is there anything worth attaining unattained by me. Yet, I am engaged in actions for public welfare. Arjun asked, O Lord, what is the need for you to be engaged in actions? Lord Krishna said, yes, there is. Should I not engage in actions, unwearied at any time? Men would follow my path in all matters, and so they will not discharge their duty. Arjun asked, what will be its result? Lord Krishna said, the result will be that these worlds will perish and I should be the cause of confusion of castes and of the destruction of people. Arjun asked, so for you it is very necessary to perform action, but is it necessary for the wise or enlightened men also to be engaged in action? Lord Krishna said, yes, it is not only necessary, it is very essential. As the unwise perform action earnestly with attachment laying claim to its fruit, so should the wise men act promptly without attachment for the public welfare. A wise man should not unsettle the minds of ignorant people attached to action, but should get them to perform all their duties, duly performing them himself. Arjun asked, what is the difference between the actions performed by the unwise and the wise? Lord Krishna said, the unwise man, whose mind is deluded by egoism, considers himself to be the doer of actions and thus gets attached to them. But the wise man understands that all actions are being done by the modes of prakriti or nature, and thus the wise man who knows the truth about the spheres of gunas or modes and karmas or actions is not attached to them. Sphere of modes include the body, senses, mind, intellect, beings and objects, etc. That is, the entire world, because they are the evolutes of the three modes of goodness, passion and ignorance. Sphere of action includes all actions taking place in the world. Arjun asked, does a man of perfect knowledge also have as much responsibility as you have? Lord Krishna said, no, it does not make any difference if the man of perfect knowledge does not perform action like the man of imperfect knowledge. But the man of perfect knowledge should not at least unsettle the mind of those fools whose knowledge is imperfect. Arjun asked, I get unsettled, my lord. What should I do? Lord Krishna said, surrendering all actions to me by discriminative intellect, freed from hope and feeling of mindness, and cured of mental fever, engage in battle. Arjun asked, what will happen by surrendering actions to you? Lord Krishna said, those men who, with an uncaviling and devout mind, follow this doctrine of mine, are freed from the binding effect of all actions. Arjun asked, what happens if people don't follow the doctrine of yours? Lord Krishna said, those who, finding fault with this doctrine of mine, do not follow it, know those deluded fools devoid of discrimination to be ruined. Arjun asked, how are they ruined by not following your doctrine? Lord Krishna said, the wise men perform actions in conformity with their pure nature, being free from attachment and aversion. But the fools perform actions in conformity with their impure nature, having attachment and aversion. Therefore, scriptural injunctions are of no avail to them, and thus they, guided by their impure nature, are ruined. Arjun asked, "How should a man save himself from this ruin, O Lord?" Lord Krishna replied, "Attachment and aversion are rooted in the sense objects. A man should not perform actions under their sway because they are his enemies." Arjun asked, "Then what should a man do?" Lord Krishna said, "A man should discharge his duty because one's own duty, though devoid of merit, is preferable to the duty of another well discharged. Even death in the performance of one's own duty brings blessedness, while the duty of another, even though meritorious, is full of fear." Arjun asked, "When one's own duty is preferable, why does a man commit a sin unwillingly?" Lord Krishna said, "It is desire begotten by the Rajogun or mode of passion. Anger ensues from it. It is insatiable and grossly wicked. Know this to be the enemy which forces one to commit a sin." Arjun asked, "What is the effect of this sinful desire?" Lord Krishna said, "As fire is enveloped by smoke, mirror by dirt, and embryo by amnion, so knowledge is enveloped by desire, and thus a man commits a sin. This desire, like fire, is insatiable and is an eternal enemy of the wise strivers. It envelops knowledge." Arjun asked, "Wherein does desire abide?" Lord Krishna said, "It abides in the senses, the mind, and the intellect, and deludes the embodied soul by veiling his wisdom through his senses, etc." Arjun asked, "How to subjugate desire?" Lord Krishna said, "O noble Arjun, first controlling the senses, kill this wicked desire by which jnana or knowledge and vijnana or realization are veiled." Arjun asked, "How to translate this method into practice, O Lord?" Lord Krishna said, "The senses are said to be superior to the body. The mind is superior to the senses. The intellect is superior to the mind, and what is greater than intellect is desire. Knowing this desire as greater than intellect, restraining the self by the self, slay this enemy in the form of desire, which is hard to overcome." Desire resides in the self or the agent, so agent is attracted towards objects, etc. The self has two fragments. One is sentient, belonging to God, and the other is inert, belonging to matter. The fragment of matter is attracted towards matter, while the fragment of God is attracted towards God, being of the same class. Therefore, desire resides in the inert fragment of the self, while in the sentient fragment, there resides thirst for divine love or eagerness to know the real, etc. End of chapter 3.